Previously, on Curvature Chronicles, Castor Ames has begun to understand what the artifact truly is. Not a book of prophecy, but a living key to the boundaries between worlds. Sarah, torn between duty and something far deeper, now knows the Kren assassin still circles nearby, and far above Earth, the Zarathian High Command has begun to watch, calculating, debating whether to intervene or to erase. What none of them realize is that the artifact's awakening has changed more than one life. It's changed the rules. As storms clear over the university, echoes of ancient portals begin to hum again, in the earth, in the air, and within Castor Ames himself. This is Episode 7, The Fracturing.
Sarah paced around the rooftop of a parking garage across from the Four Corners bar. Her eyes were on the skyline, but her thoughts were somewhere else. Out there, the Kren was lurking. She had a good idea where he'd been last night if the newspaper reports about three gang members getting demolished by one guy were even half accurate. The one that couldn't get warm no matter what the hospital tried was the clincher for her. But Sarah's mind wasn't on him entirely. Not anymore. Not after what she had seen in the portal stream. Not after what she'd felt in the portal stream. The latest surge of energy from the book artifact had left a signature in the air. Not of the Kren or of Castor Ames, which is what she'd expected, but something older. A harmonic trace she had never felt in years of training and simulations. It matched Earth. And that was wrong. Sarah exhales sharply and pulls her hair back into a ponytail. She pulled up time logs on her wrist link. The soft purple glow flickered as she ran through them. The artifact had been stolen from the orbiting research outpost Oryx Station. It was near the edge of Zarathian territory in Andromeda. Who knows how the Kren got near enough to steal it? If it had been a Kren raiding party that had taken it, possibly unaware of the artifact's true nature. Then they'd force-bonded one of their own men to it, a violation of every known safety protocol. And that, according to her training and experience, should have been the end of it. The book should have either A. disintegrated, Sarah at that thought. In the limited time she had been around the artifact when it was active, the thing's ego showed up as massive. Or B. return to the dormancy stasis it had been in before. Instead, it had fled, and not across the room or even across the station, but to another galaxy? Sarah rubbed her forehead and tried to breathe deep. She'd gotten here in the usual way, a Zarathian transport that had used its helix crystals and Zarathian DNA to travel from Andromeda through Saturn's North Pole hexagonal storm. The energy that took wasn't an insignificant amount, but the leap the artifact had taken? That magnitude wasn't just rare, it was unprecedented. And yet Sarah had begun to suspect this wasn't the first time the artifact had made the trip. At least three known human civilizations, the Norse, the Egyptians, the Maya, had all reported events, anomalies and celestial artifacts that were eerily similar to Zarathian technology. In every ancient case, it was the same pattern. 1. An object falls from the stars. 2. It bonds to a visionary misfit or a scholar. 3. The civilization shifts abruptly, in either knowledge or structure, or collapse. Sarah pulled out an old flagged report on the Egyptian incident. One line truly stood out.
He who bore the light of Ra spoke in tongues and built a temple no one could enter. Then vanished.
Another anomaly. The Norse from Scandinavia had been classified under mythic incursion, class 3. The Bifrost, encoded descriptions of dimension threading. All too familiar. And the cenote story, the one that bothered her the most. the hero twins, emerging from the darkness with knowledge they hadn't had before and shouldn't have had after. The symbols, the portal alignments, the artifact had chosen Earth this time, because it had chosen Earth before. Many times, Sarah lay down on the concrete and watched the stars emerge through the clouds.
Why?
She whispered. Why Earth? Why now? Why Castor Ames? There was a gut-punching feeling inside her that she hadn't wanted to admit even to herself. This wasn't a coincidence. It wasn't even a failed mission. It was a loop. And maybe, just maybe, she and Castor weren't observing it. They were part of it. She stood, pulled her hood tight around her as the night air continued to thicken with storm-filled humidity. Somewhere out there, the Kren watched. She could feel it. More unsettling was the sense that something else was watching also. Not Zorathian, not Kren, not human. The artifact. She nodded to herself, yes, that's it. And it was waiting for her to catch up. Castor Ames had stopped trying to fight it. Whatever the book was, whatever it wanted, it had already become part of him. There were no more polite transitions, no more gentle dreams. Now it pulled. He was brushing his teeth when it happened again. A flicker. The mirror bowed out toward him and fractured. Then the world blinked out. Castor found himself standing on top of a snowy hilltop again. An ancient Norse longhouse crackled, burning in the distance. He looked to his left, and there stood the same silver-eyed women in furs. She said nothing. She just stared into the flames with an obvious glint of approval in her gaze. She turned to Castor and took one of his hands into both of hers. Smiling up at him, she quietly said,
Jarl Castor, you're not just surviving it, you're growing. You're adapting.
The Egyptian Sands returned next. The same priest stood before him as before. This time, when he spoke, his tone was more reverenced and less warning. The priest intoned,
You walk between worlds as Ra walked the skies. As Osiris fell and rose again.
He pressed the Ankh into Castor's chest.
Lead them.
Finally, in the dripping darkness of the cenote, the hero twins faced him. They almost looked familiar to him. They had faces like his, eyes like his. One said,
You don't belong to the book.
One said,
But it doesn't belong to you either.
Said the other.
Together you belong,
they said in unison. The scene fractured in front of him. Someone started to peel off the strips of his reality like it was a sticker. The book was no longer showing him things, it was speaking through those things. A voice, the Norse woman's voice, clear now, rang out through the spaces between worlds. Calm. Assured. Seductive.
You've always wondered why you felt out of place, Castor Ames. Why others' answers never matched up to the questions that you asked. It's because you were never meant to follow. You were meant to lead. Not just in your world, but between them. Together, with the book, you could restore what's been broken. You could break what needs to be destroyed. Time would no longer bind you. It would obey you.
A great Norse longhouse, an Egyptian pyramid, and a bloodied Mayan temple all appeared before him, each one glowing like a second small sun. At each one's base sat an empty throne.
You could be king of the thresholds, a sovereign of change. All you have to do is stop resisting.
Castor clenched his fists. The air around him almost vibrated as he did so. His skin felt too tight on his bones.
But why? Why Earth, and why now? And why me?
The voice pulsed again, sounding almost amused. Because you asked questions no one else has. Because you read the signs all others ignore. Because even after all these centuries, you're still listening. Then the light exploded and washed everything away. He woke up in the bathroom floor, breath ragged, drenched in sweat. The book was sitting open on the windowsill now, pages fluttering to a wind that didn't exist. Outside, the moon was full and bright. In the reflection in the glass, he saw something. It was the throne he'd seen before, not looking too distant, more like it was waiting.
Sarah stared at the puddles in the alley. That was where the Kren's trail had gone cold. His residual heat signature, already faint, had evaporated. No trace of his being here remained. No cellular debris. No scent trail. Just absence. A clean severing of his energy from this space. It was like he'd slipped into the void between breaths. She hated how good he was at hiding. She waved her scanner again at the alley openings, watching to see if the low-frequency pulse brought back an Kren-type signatures, knowing that it probably wouldn't. Sarah shut the signal down, pocketed the device, and turned toward the university district. Her instincts were screaming now, not about the Kren, but about Castor. Something had shifted. She could feel it, like she felt the line of static electricity racing along her spine. She just knew the artifact had jumped with him again. She checked his dorm. She checked Boomer's, the library, the cafe. Finally, she found him just past midnight, sitting on the park bench where they had run into each other, literally, for the first time. Bathed in moonlight with the book resting in his lap like a cat that had decided to allow its favorite human some time with it. He looked older, tired, but awake in a way she'd never seen before. "You came back," Castor said, not looking up.
"Sure. It took me a bit this time, but really, you're not hard to find. You hum now. You're a giant hairy tuning fork."
She sat down beside him. He gave a small laugh that quickly subsided back to his silence. "The book took me again."
"I know, Castor."
"It's talking to me now. Not just the random written line or even showing me things. It's trying to convince me to follow it."
He turned to look at her, his brow knitted momentarily.
"Well, not exactly follow, more like lead with it. What does it want, Sarah?"
She paused. The truth, or at least what she thought she could get away with telling him, would have to do.
"It wants an anchor, someone it can mold. Someone curious enough to open it and resilient enough to survive it. And someone ambitious enough to use it."
"We haven't talked about it, but I'd be willing to bet that Earth isn't the only place that the Zorathians have been on other than Zora."
Sarah half smiled and scratched her left shoulder.
"That would be a good bet."
"Okay, then why Earth?"
"Castor, I've been trying to figure that out. Every time this artifact shows up and opens portals on Earth, it leaves a mark. The Norse, Egyptian, Mayan, all those civilizations ruled their part of the planet, and that was orchestrated each time. But this time, no one planned it."
Castor massaged his temples as he spoke. He looked her directly in the eyes.
"Let me get this straight. The book, or artifact, has been on Earth before, and each time, it was planned, or, as you said, orchestrated by your people."
Sarah nodded.
"But this time, it just came on its own and chose me to be its arms and legs,
That's what I think, Castor. Maybe it chose Earth because it remembers last time it was here.
They sat in silence for a long while. Castor took the book out of his backpack and laid it on his lap. The book began flipping through pages, even though neither of them touched it.
I saw myself on a throne, in this latest vision, surrounded by fire and light. Everyone looked like they were waiting for me to say something, like they wanted to do what I said.
Sarah noticeably stiffened, subtle but there.
And did you like that, Castor? Did it feel good?
Yes, that's what is scaring me. Not only did it feel good, but it felt, I don't know, right. Like something inside of me has been waiting for this.
Sarah breathed slowly.
We're in dangerous territory now.
Castor lightly grabbed her arm as he turned toward her.
Because of what I might become?
Sarah didn't answer directly. Instead, she asked,
Would you still want that throne if I told you that my orders were to kill you if you lose control?
He blinked.
You were told to kill me?
If the artifact starts using you to threaten Zarathian stability, yes.
Sarah, are you going to kill me?
Honestly, I don't know yet.
He studied her intently.
Is this you talking? Or do you report to someone who's calling the shots? I mean, it's not like you want to, right?
Sarah looked away, then at the book. Then she smacked Castor hard in the arm, almost knocking him off the sidewalk.
Of course I don't want to.
It figures. Finally getting to my place in the world, and my favorite alien, favorite anyone really, might have to... Well, I'm not saying it.
Sarah sucked air in.
Castor, I remember what you said to me on the beach. That you'd never really felt like you belonged anywhere. Well, how do you think a basically orphaned girl from 4 million light years away feels? Why do you think I'm here?
Castor said nothing.
It's because I didn't feel like I belonged there.
Castor slid his arm under Sarah's.
Well, for now, you belong anywhere I am. And hey, if worse comes to worse, we could hide the book in the library and go to a beach in Florida or something. What do you think of that?
I think that if the artifact can find you from a galaxy away, that a few hundred miles won't be much of a challenge.
The remainder of the walk back to Castor's apartment was quiet, tense, but with a warm undercurrent neither of them could name yet. The kind of charged silence that only happens after a shared truth. Sarah walked with her hands in her pockets, hearing straining, hyper aware of every footstep echo in the near empty street. Castor glanced at her now and then but said nothing. Book cradled under his arm, inert for the moment as if digesting everything. Castor finally opened his mouth to speak, maybe to even thank her for not killing him on sight when he froze. The air changed, not the wind or the temperature, the air itself. Sarah stopped, and Castor followed her gaze. From the mouth of the alley, a figure stepped into the light, gray-skinned, wearing a coat with dried blood on it, eyes like frost-bitten steel.
The Kren, get behind me,
Sarah whispered, reaching into her jacket. The Kren was already in motion. In a blur, he slashed the air with a knife, a jagged, rust-colored blade he'd taken from the gang fight before, crude but sharp enough to pierce flesh. Even Zarathian flesh. The slash struck Sarah on the side before she could react. With a grunt, she staggered into the wall, the impact driving her that direction. Not a fatal blow, not even close, but enough to distract her and get her out of the way. Sarah, Castor shouted. He raised the book like it was a shield. He was too slow. The Kren lunged, twisting the blade under Castor's arm. He yanked the book free with an inhuman snarl. The moment he'd torn it from Castor's hands, the streetlights blinked out, and the pavement underfoot rippled. A low-pitched hum filled the air,
and light contorted all around the book and the Kren as he tried to reassert an unstable bond. Castor lunged at the Kren, grabbing his coat, yelling, "No! No! You don't know how to work with it!"
"I don't need to. I only need it open."
Then the book flared with a sickly white light. Both the Kren and the book vanished in a blink of folded space. Castor hit the ground hard, skidding on his side. The silence was deafening. Sarah staggered to him, hand pressed to her ribs, face pale.
"Castor, are you..."
"He took it. He really took it."
"We'll get it back."
Sarah knelt beside him. But Castor wasn't listening. He was gripping the pavement with trembling fingers, looking like he was trying to dig through it to get to the vanished portal. His voice cracked as he said,
"I have to get it back. I felt it. It's a part of me. I need it."
Her stomach sank. Not because of the Kren, or even the fact that the artifact was out of their possession, but because of what she heard in those words Castor said, and how dangerous it made her to him. Brushek landed with violent force on the floor of the antique store. Dust rose from the floor where the book had spat him out. The lights were off. A solitary shaft of moonlight cut through the window blinds and tried to light the room through that now swirling cloud. Outside, not even a car passed by, it was so quiet. The Kren groaned as he swung his body to the left to push himself up off the floor. He'd been hit before in his life, but this impact ranked right up with the hardest. His coat was scorched along one sleeve. The stolen knife, useless now, laid a couple of feet away on the floor. The book lay a few feet away from him, glowing faintly, not with light or power, but with presence. Its cover rolled in slow waves like it was breathing, watching. Froshek reached for it. The book actually shivered. That gave him a moment's pause, then he grabbed it. The fluttering pulse stopped and the pain began. Not physical pain. His training and attitude would have vanquished physical pain. It wasn't in his organs or bones. It was something far deeper. A screaming in his blood, a tension in his mind. His identity was being unraveled, moment by moment, syllable by syllable. He slammed the book down on the counter.
"This is not what I wanted. I thought of the stronghold as I've been trained."
He smacked his hand down on top the book, but all that did was start another wave of blood pain.
"You must take me to the gates of Zorathian High Command."
Nothing. He picked up a 1992 Kentucky Derby commemorative glass and pounded that on the cover of the artifact. It flipped open. Pages turned and rearranged themselves even as he watched. Hieroglyphs from a dozen old civilizations, some earthen, some from other worlds, melted together. Ink bled into symbols that refused to obey or be comprehended. His breath started to fog the air. It was growing colder in the room.
"I bonded with you first," he barked. "You will bend to my will. We still have a connection."
The book flared suddenly, not in submission, but defiance. The pages stopped moving. The book floated off the table. Visions flooded Vrashek's mind. Failures, collapses, worlds where the book had turned on those who welded it. The long cyclical memory of the artifact asserting itself like a creature cornered. A single phrase echoed through the store. "You are a thief. You do not understand. Only together is served, not individual." The Kren staggered back.
"No! You will serve me,
he growled. You will die, the artifact replied. The temperature continued to drop until Vrashek shivered and pulled his coat tighter. Then, a mirror cracked from the cold. It was almost freezing in this part of the store. The book snapped shut on its own, thudding against the floor. And then, silence. Vrashek stood motionless, staring at the artifact on the floor, his chest rising and falling, steam still curling from his mouth, even as it started to warm up almost as quickly as it had gotten cold. His hands trembled, but not from the temperature or from rage, from fear.
You've been listening to The Curvature Key. If you're enjoying the show, don't forget to like, subscribe, and rate it wherever you listen to podcasts. We really appreciate all the feedback that we get. Until next time, keep your eyes on the curve, because every story bends reality.